You just did?
Yeah.
Cool, huh? Hi everyone, good morning. So this is the time of the year we usually conduct our annual Body, Mind and Spirit Yoga Weekend. This year, because of COVID and safety considerations, we had cancelled the event. But nonetheless, for the next 2 hours, we have a really a very appropriate and wonderful event set up for all of you. We have a wonderful topic dealing with anxiety, which I'm sure in some form or the other, all of us are going through, or we have someone we know who is going through. And we also have the most wonderful speaker for this topic. His Holiness Romapad Swami Maharaj is a world-renowned speaker on topics relating to dealing with negative emotions, including anxiety. And Maharaj has over 50 years practicing as a bhakti yogi in this field, and he'll He'll now speak to us on this topic. So please listen in. For the first 1 hour, we'll have Maharaj's talk. And after that, at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, 7:30 a.m. Singapore time, we'll have an Ask the Monk session where all of you can let us know if you want to ask a question, unmute, and ask Maharaj a question. So without further ado, over to you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Madhava Kunjabiha Gopijana Balabha Girivara Dhadi Girivara Dhadi Gopijana Balabha Girivara Dhadi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari Dasara Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Dasara Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Chadi Tira Vana Cha Jamana Tira Vana Cha Di Vana Cha Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhadi Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhadi Dasara Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana
Oh boy. Hare Krishna. So, dealing with anxiety, even during kirtan.
new fad, anxiety during kirtan.
Good graphics, huh? I didn't do it. Look at that chart on the left. It's going down and it just smashed through something and looks like a graphic for COVID on the lower left and something like a tornado, something hurricane on the upper left. Definitely is COVID on the right. And then the reaction. Dealing with anxiety. Because I often speak at universities when I ask the organizer of the university program, what are some topics that you think would be very relevant to the students? This is at the top of the list. 4 or 5 things, but it's way up there. Anxiety. And there's different categories of anxiety. We'll see some of them. And how to deal with it. Because it's something that confronts us. And there's a lot of uncertainty that leads to anxiety for sure. Rising anxiety. Here's a quick take look, really quick, of one little sample of anxiety survey. Just earlier this, in the late spring, the survey was done, college students, of course. This is kind of at the peak of COVID. 91% of the students surveyed reported that COVID-19 had added greater stress and anxiety. 91% disappointment and sadness. Now, for those of you who are participating in this remotely, arrangement has been made for all kinds of statistics and charts and interviews with people that are telling their human interest story of what it's like being subjected to the uncertainties and all the other things that go with COVID. If you haven't received it, send a message in somehow. There's a chat box probably, and we'll see that you get a copy of all that statistics. So humans aren't the only ones subject to this anxiety. What to do? And sometimes it brings great fear. Here it comes, this unexpected, whatever it is, coming at me, and I'm feeling some negative feelings here. So here's some dictionary definitions of anxiety. Distress or uneasiness of mind caused by fear of danger or misfortune. A feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease, typically about an imminent event. Something that hasn't happened yet, but it's just about to happen, or with an uncertain outcome. Now, a big word used these days, this uncertain, is shrouded in uncertainty in our time. Because try to make a plan to do anything, and you really don't know what's next. I like the graphic. Notice what's on this backpack there. The face of that little boy's backpack, and we're walking through a forest of uncertainty, and who knows what's next. In general, those who deal with this or professionally help those who are passing through anxiety, there's principal sources or a mixture of them. Some feeling of being judged, or fear of feeling judged. So that's interpersonal or social. Fear of death. That's a big one. And it's a certainty. It's not uncertain. And fear of loneliness. If I'm not mistaken, in the British government, there's now a ministry for loneliness. I've been told that anyways. Because it's a problem. It's such a widespread problem in the UK at least, that they have a whole ministry for it. So these are sources of anxiety and fear. Now, in one sense, fear or anxiety is quite natural, quite normal for every embodied being. And that fear is fear of death, because there's predators in all species. This anxiety or fear principle is within all embodied beings. According to the Vedic picture, there's four different categories of this: animal impulses, eating. Isn't that an interesting image? He's trying to eat apples through an ice cube. Sleeping, mating, and defending. And of the four, the fearing or anxiety or defending is the strongest. That is to say, if you're doing any one of the other three things, if defending comes as a challenge, you stop the other three, you do that one. It's the strongest impulse for embodied beings. So it's a really big one. It's a really big one. Now, the modern circumstance that we find ourselves in, human experience, Bhagavad Gita describes it this way: dukkha layam ashashvatam. Dukkha means distress. And it's the place that we're in is a place that's both temporary and full of distress or misery. So that which is an already existing propensity gets kicked or worsened by the nature of the place that we're in. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, nice phrase, padam, padam, yadvi padam. Nice alliteration. Padam, padam, yadvi padam. This is a place where there's calamity. Vipadam. At every step. Vipadam. Calamity. So anxiety is inflamed by the very circumstances in which we find ourselves. So it's not a surprise that it exists. So now this is a little bit, next is a little bit of an interactive participation session. Ponder, if you would please, the cause of your anxiety, something in the past. Cause of anxiety, something from the past. And aside from the cause, how is it affecting you currently? And did the cause that was affecting you in the past become a reality? So I'm going to ask for some persons to raise their hands and share something, if you don't mind, in a public forum. Something in the past that was a cause of anxiety. The cause. Not the anxiety, but the cause. And is it affecting you presently? Okay.
Good evening, everyone. So I'm from another country. I'm from Bulgaria. So I've been here for a couple of years. And what also made me very anxious is when someone tell me, oh, you're a foreigner. Like, as if I'm coming from another planet. But then when I'm like, yes, I am a foreigner. I do come from another place, like from another country. So the minute I accepted what I cannot change, that no longer bothers me. People still tell me, oh, you're a foreigner, but it's no longer, it no longer bothers me. So the more things I accept that I cannot change, the more I live in peace.
Nice. That's a very good example.
Yeah.
Very good. So it's the cause is no longer a cause. Just by a shift of how you view yourself and self-acceptance, whether others mean it in a positive, negative, or neutral way, it's, it doesn't, because it's self-acceptance. Good. Anyone else want to volunteer? Anyone else online want to volunteer something? Okay, we're not a volunteering mood today. Maybe I need to warm you up a little bit more. Harish, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Whoa, okay.
Something that used to make me anxious is hitting a deer while I'm driving a car.
Doing what?
Hitting a deer while driving.
Hitting a deer while driving a car.
Yeah.
That it caused more than anxiety for the poor deer. But something like that happened?
No, it hasn't happened at all. But
it was a concern.
It's a concern, especially at night.
Yeah.
I would have to stay even more focused. But over a period of time, I've come to realize that if it has to happen, it's going to happen. There was this one time when I was staying very focused when I was driving at night. And I thought I would never see a deer. And I did, and it did not. And just when I was trying to relax while I was driving, and when I was taking an exit, and that's the spot I would not expect to see a deer, I saw some deer crossing just then. Just when I thought, I'm almost home, I'm not going to see it anymore. So, and that incident made me realize that there's no point staying anxious about it. And if it has to happen, it's going to happen.
Nice example. Interesting example. Interesting example. One more invitation round, and if not, we'll move on.
Okay. Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very clearly. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Ashley. And one of the things that I've had a lot of anxiety with are relationships and being like very close with people. Growing up, I kind of always had a very distant family. And I also was in the military. So I'm kind of used to people coming and going and, you know, kind of people being too busy or, you know, having other important things. So I think in today's world, like one thing that brings me anxiety is like kind of not knowing how long someone would be around. So, but I'm learning now that there are people out there that, you know, do have time and will, you know, see me as some type of importance.
I got about 50%. Anybody here got more than 50%? The sound system in this room isn't serving you very well. So I don't think there's... Wait a minute. Somebody here did hear more than 50%. Ah. The being in solitary... you know, position because of COVID or persons that you know and are dear to you are going to die and they won't be around anymore. And that's an anxiety. Is that the idea? We lost her. Okay. It's certainly an anxiety. It's that fear of one's death, fear of others' death, and loss of someone dear to you that's going to happen sometime. It's inevitable. Would you like to speak?
So when she was little and like a babe, can you hear me?
He's going to make the volume a little stronger.
So when she was little, like an infant, and I was a single parent, I was anxious, like, you know, what would happen next? And looks like we both are alive, so turned out fine. But yeah, those moments, like, you know, when you just don't know what's going to happen are...
uncertainty of the future.
Exactly. But yeah.
And what resources are going to be available to you that are reliable, not in one moment there and then gone?
Exactly.
Uncertainty, insecurity.
Yeah.
Well, what about this other question? Is it still affecting your life now? Lesser, but to some degree.
I would say there's always like now. Earlier it was her, now it's COVID, next thing would be my job, next thing would be my visa. But over time I've realized there would be something. It'll, like, you know, until I'm alive, there would be something there to make me anxious.
So worrying has diminished because worrying doesn't really take care of the need.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to hear that in a moment. You're way ahead of us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now... so I guess people that do something that know that this field of negative emotion a whole lot, they say there's three primary ones that you see across the bottom. They're referenced in Bhagavad Gita, and you can make note and you can look at these Bhagavad Gita verses later if you like. 2.56 and 4.10. There's the one on the left is where it all comes from. That Sanskrit word is raga. It's hankering, a material hankering based upon identification with the body, raga. And when one identifies with the body, guaranteed next comes bhaya. Just like that, the animal propensity. Those embodied beings have fear. Fear of loss of something or loss of life, anxiety. So the root cause is on the left. This one in the middle is the future. And the one on the far right, that's the past. Anger, externally directed. Depression, internally directed. Krodha and Shoka. These are directly spoken of in Bhagavad Gita. It's not like a psychology text, but it is describing the nature of human emotion. And going way back on the left-hand side, we're going to spend some time with identification with the body and desires that go along with that identification with the body. And to assist this, there's a nice little story. It's called The King and the Beggar. So it goes like this. Once upon a time, there was a king. And the king was leaving his palace. And just outside the palace, he saw a very poor man sitting with a little begging bowl. And the king felt this calling of compassion for this poorer person. So he said, "Is there something that I can do for you?" And the beggar said, "Please consider carefully before you make this offer." And the king said, "Well, I'm the king and I have influence and I have wealth and I have means to assist you, so tell me what it is that you would like and your wish will be fulfilled." And the beggar said, "Very well, see this begging bowl, please fill it." So the king turned to his treasurer who was accompanying him and said, fill up his begging bowl with some money, some wealth. As soon as the treasurer put money inside the begging bowl, it disappeared. And the king said, give him more. And it kept happening and happening, and a crowd formed, and the king was thinking, I can't be defeated by a beggar. I gave a promise, and kings keep their promise. So he began filling up the begging bowl, and it emptied and emptied, and a crowd came around saying, look at this. The king has been defeated by a beggar. And this is the way the story goes. Some other kings might have done some other things besides try to keep their word, but he was a noble king. And he said, who are you? And what is it with this begging bowl? He said, the beggar said, in my previous life, I was your teacher. And I promised you, because you hadn't achieved your perfection yet, I would come back in this life and help you become relieved from your misunderstandings of what real happiness is. Real happiness is not fulfillment of material desire. This begging bowl is human desire. That's the end of the story. So the message is, human desire, this, what this chart shows over here, the raga, based upon identification with the body, there's no limit. Is there a limit to desire? Whenever something is fulfilled, then it's not enough, then it has to be more, and so forth. So material desire is the bondage to material life. Now, Buddhism and so many other teachings give that understanding. It's our bondage, material desire. So how do you become free from material desire? We'll hear this. It's an explanation from the bhakti perspective. But anxiety, unfulfilled desire, or fear, these words are being used interchangeably here. Fear or anxiety of loss of something. So coming up that there's some impending danger or some pain or someone is intending to do you harm, some evil forces moving and is headed your way. Now, in some cases, those threats, something that's impending danger, is real. And so there are cases certainly where real fear has its appropriate. You're careful. I know in some, I'll share this. When there was this mass shooting thing going on, I forget, we had somebody come in and give an instruction how to deal with a shooter when they come in the door with a weapon. Because it was happening and happening and happening. So how to deal with it besides, be prepared, besides just become fearful and end up a statistic. So being prepared for some possibility of that like that, that's intelligent. It's prudent. But there's imagined fear that's on the other side. In general, speaking in general terms, whether it's real or imagined, there's going to be some fear or anxiety. Just what that means is practically speaking, for us as devotees, aspiring devotees at least, even in Krishna's pastimes, his associates, they have anxiety and they have fear. Like when there's some difficulty coming, a demon enters into Vrindavan and very ferocious and wild and dangerous, they become fearful primarily for the safety of Krishna, for their own safety as well. So the point is this, since desire is natural, even on the soul platform, dealing with anxiety is something we need to reckon with. So there's unhealthy anxiety, and unhealthy anxiety, just focusing on that rather than the healthy ones. A common source, an often arising source, is anxiety that comes from unresolved grief or some unresolved trauma. I know some individuals, their life's work is trauma therapy, because in childhood or some stage of life or even in previous lives, it's not uncommon that there's some trauma and it's something that's stuck in somebody's system. And when that stuck in your system trauma or grief is unresolved, then there's some anxiety. It just gets prompted by something that's not even related to the past thing. So there's methods to address. And one of the methods, common, is find a good person that's profession is in this field. They call them caregivers or whatever you like to call them. And you express and have some professional understanding, or at least a friend that's caring. And it helps to resolve some unresolved anxiety caused by some unresolved grief or unresolved trauma. Now that's on the higher level. We don't have so much skill for that. Now we're going to take a look from the bhakti perspective, go a little bit deeper than resolving trauma in that way. What's the very root cause behind all the causes and effects? What's the root cause? And according to the bhakti perspective, Bhagavad Gita perspective, it's false ego. And it's a inflated sense of self-worth or self-identity, not in touch with who we really are. And it's driven by false ego. It's one of the coverings of the soul, ahankar. And a nice verse, one of my favorite verses these days from Srimad Bhagavatam, is shown here. Bhayam means fear. Dvitiya means duality. And abhinivesh means absorption in. So fear arises, syat, fear arises when we as a spiritual being misidentify ourselves with what we're not, the material covering of the spirit soul. And with this abhinivesh or absorption in the external illusory energy, fear arises. This is the root. So I'll say it again the other way. Cause and effect. The cause is absorption in the illusory energy, the temporary field of what's around us, and identifying with it very strongly. Strong absorption, strong identification. That's the cause. The effect is who we really are becomes covered. And we start moving with false ego. And when we move with false ego, there's fear. Fear arises for that reason. So contemplating that fact, what are we to do? It's nice to have knowledge, then it's better than nice to apply it. So how do we apply it? Well, here's some ways not to apply it. Just continue with the absorption and the temporary. Chase after money. Try to solve problems. We discussed this morning, those of you who are attending the morning class, there's a problem out there, and figure out a nice strategy to take care of the problem that's out there. Those are problems perhaps that have something to do with money, but safety. And over on the right is get your security camera so people won't invade and harm you. Supposing those don't seem to work, not supposing, but the difficulty continues. The material shelters are inadequate. So the anxiety feeling is still there. So fight or flight. Those are terms that come from the parasympathetic nervous system, for those of you that know that terminology. The flight is escape, fight is aggression, and those are from the lower mode of nature, like animal instinct, fight or flight. But there's a higher path. The path of self-realization is a higher path. And it takes a little reflection over a period of time, cultivation of mode of goodness consciousness, taking a look, introspecting, what are my deepest fears? What do I have now that I feel I might lose? That's a fear of loss. Will I, just like someone was saying, loss of loved ones, and then I won't have them in my company anymore? Potentially other things, what I might lose. And for that matter, from a philosophical point of view, what really can I say is mine? So if we want a life of reduction of anxiety, these are some introspecting thoughts. But supposing you're good at it, you're careful, and you're more in the mode of goodness than you were before, is it possible to have a life that's free from anxiety? Not so likely, because this is an image of a roller coaster. It's a pretty interesting image, isn't it? Life is like a roller coaster. There's ups and there's downs, and you don't know what's next. So supposing you ask yourself or a friend of yours, do you have any problems? And they say no. Great. So no worries, right? Or they say yes. And then you ask, is there something that you can do about it yourself, or ask them? They say yes, then why worry? And if they say no, then why worry? Pretty clear, right? Worrying is the anxiety. It's not the practical action. It's just the state of uncertainty again. This is a standard point of reference that motivational speakers use. There's what you can do something about. That's your circle of control. And then a little bit lighter is out there. You can influence others. And then there's things that you really can't influence at all, although that concerns you. So don't function in that anxiety space out there. Although it may concern you, stay focused on yourself and that which you can immediately have connection with in your internal life, at least in your practical activities of life. These are sensible points. points of advice. The anxiety, just say it again. Don't spend much time out there in things that you really can't influence, but they concern you. That you're spinning your wheels. You're increasing anxiety unnecessarily. Or here's a common phrase. When you have nothing to lose, you have nothing to fear. There's a Sanskrit terminology. Maybe you've heard it before. Nirmama, which means nothing is mine. Prabhupada speaks of this in second chapter Bhagavad Gita. And he uses the example of a cashier. So a cashier may have lots of money passed through their hand in the course of a day. Say a bank teller. But if they think that it's theirs, they'll be arrested. They'll be put in jail. It's unlawful. So if you have the consciousness that nothing is mine, but you're dealing with the energy of the source of all energy, and you're taking responsible course of action in relation to those things, it's like the consciousness of a cashier. It's the detached consciousness. The detached cashier doesn't not count what comes in and give back appropriate currency in exchange. You act responsibly, but not in the sense of ownership, but the sense of service, and service to a higher cause or a higher purpose like that. Then going on to something we spoke about this morning, this spiritual joy, nice image. It looks like somebody just stuck a flower in the middle of a sidewalk curb area. But we're in a world that's filled with variegatedness. It's filled with duality. You're familiar with this duality idea, right? Wherever there's this, there's that. Like the weather in Chicago. It gets really hot and then it gets really cold. Wherever there's, it's daytime and it's nighttime, there's happiness and there's stress, there's pleasure and there's pain. And it's a world of duality. It says wherever there's one thing, its opposite also exists. So now what? If you're looking for happiness in that field of duality, you're guaranteed to experience the opposite of happiness because it's in the field of duality. So what's the option? The option is look within. This is on the topic of contending with circumstances that where there's anxiety, it's just part of life. It's part of life. You're not something wrong with you if there's some anxiety. It's how do you address yourself to it, not just cope with it, but how do you deal with it? So the Bhagavad Gita topic that we discussed this morning, here it is again, this Brahma-Bhuta stage. Remember this from this morning? The platform of spiritual realization of the self. That's this Brahma-Bhuta stage. And where there's the Brahma-Bhuta stage, there's a joyfulness within. It's natural. You know who you are. There's a natural joyfulness. And when there's a natural joyfulness, na sochati na kangsati, the hankering and lamenting on the material platform subsides because you're feeling quite contented. You're feeling full. You're feeling very satisfied. Neither hankering nor lamenting. Hankering is the future, lamenting is the past, and you're not in either the past or the future. You're contented in the moment. Spiritual joy is something we want, and it's accessed not through the temporary absorption in the temporary. It's experienced within. So this is a spiritual approach or a non-material approach. That is elevation of consciousness. consciousness that's beyond the temporary, the gross and subtle features of the temporary, the body and the mind, the gross and the subtle. Elevation of consciousness beyond that. And it's an actual, it's not just a notion, it's something that one can experience. It's meant for us. It's the platform of happiness that's being encouraged by Bhagavad Gita and other such teachings. Well, here's an image you're probably familiar with. This is the soul transmigrating from one form to the next in this life, and then after passing from this body into the next, into the next, and so on. The transmigration of the soul. So rather than being absorbed in the temporary, or what we discussed in the morning class, the problems that are confronting you, and too much absorption in the problems that are confronting you, look longer term, like who you really are, the eternal soul, and accept the process that gets you there while you're dealing with the problems that are at the moment. It's not advocacy of irresponsibility in modern worldly circumstances, but too much absorption in that is will cover your true understanding of who you are and your true happiness. Here's another set of images. I'll go through this quickly because it takes some time. But at the top is the spiritual realm, the soul and the super soul. Below that is the subtle material, mind, intelligence, and false ego, including the sense objects, because they're subtle. And then there's the gross, the elements and the organs of the sense. So there's a big gap between who we are and what's going on there in that subtle region, mind, intelligence, false ego. And there's a big gap between what's going on the subtle plane and the gross plane. So Sankhya, which is a system of yoga, is teaching us to align things in the physical, both subtle and gross physical level, with an understanding of who we are. That's what Sankhya is, and it involves an intellectual understanding, a practical meditation process, and then it flows into a lifestyle of devotion, connecting and aligning everything with who we really are. So we're almost done. There's this misalignment. We discussed it a little bit this morning also. There's a perception, the outer reality, the physical world that we're in, and there's some expectations that are within the mind. They're physical and the subtle are out of alignment. That's a cause of anxiety. Or misalignment between the subtle and who we are, like our desires on the subtle level and who we really are. That's the problem. Misalignment is a problem. So what do? Try to make alignment. That's what yoga is. Yoga comes from the Sanskrit root yuj, Y-U-J, which is the fundamental syllable or dhatu or the root for yoga. It's alignment. And misalignment, work towards alignment. That's yoga. And of all the yoga systems, the topmost, according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaking, the topmost yoga is bhakti yoga. To take the misalignment, this anxiety experience, into proper alignment, self-discovery. Now, back again, there's health, there's anxiety that accompanies life, desire is always there. We mentioned way back, wherever there's desire, there's going to be some anxiety. And so here's some healthy anxiety examples. Have a desire for higher consciousness or become enlightened. That's a healthy desire, and thus there's a healthy anxiety. I'm not there yet. That's good. Keep going. Or towards ourselves, not wanting, some anxiety of overindulgence or abhinivesh, that Sanskrit term, absorption in the temporary. So I want to have a desire towards not that undue attraction for the temporary. So, for example, using your time. I don't know how you deal with time management, but I know it's something you really have to stay on top of. If you get distracted or too much absorbed in something, either having fun doing something or getting stressed out by something that's like distracting, you're not using your time well, and you feel it. It's ouch, it hurts, it's a pinch. So time management is important, and having some healthy anxiety about using time well, that's good. And towards others, you want to be a well-wisher towards others, that's some anxiety. You, like me, probably know some people that are passing through some difficult times. And there's some anxiety about that. That's healthy. Not an obsession, but something. And you want to do something to help them. So, like a parent and their child having some anxiety. Becoming a parent, you're buying yourself into some anxiety. But it's healthy. Not unhealthy. But what happens when it gets out of control? There was a question this morning about the avalanche experience. It gets out of control. So material energy is working under Krishna's direction, Maya Dakshina Prakriti. We need to recognize we're under Krishna's control. And that's not bad unless you see Krishna as an adversary. Here's a rat or a mouse or whatever, and the cat has the mouse in her jaws. That's fearful. But the cat, same mother cat with a little baby kitten in her jaws, is not fearful. So the jaws of the cat can be fearful or protective. So a lot has to do with your regard for that source that we're under the care and shelter of. Here's a nice little story, and we're about ready to end. This is an airplane story. And this is a real life story. There was, those of you that have ridden in international flights, you know what it's like. It's a long... in airplanes and like somebody came on and said, sorry, we're not going to serve drinks now because we're expecting some turbulence. Make sure you have your seatbelt fastened. That's common. And then they said, you know, again, we haven't hit the intensity of the turbulence, but we're not going to be serving the meal either. Make sure you have your seatbelt fastened. And then, sure enough, you know, they hit a storm. And those of you that have been in airplanes where there's a storm, it's all of a sudden you go way up, and all of a sudden you go way down. And you don't know when it's going to stop, and it's you know, are the wings of the plane going to fall off? It's really frightening. And your stomach is up here and your body's down there. And so when a situation like that happened in this one real life story, everyone was looking around. If you've been in a fight, I'm going to tell you a little personal story about something I experienced. And, everyone's nervous and some people are screaming and some people are praying and some people are squirming and looking around and, you know, the plane's going like this and like this and they don't know if you're going to make it. And the person just narrating the story saw on the opposite side of the aisle was a young girl who was sitting there reading a book, and she wasn't freaking out like most of the other people, and she was just completely calm and sometimes yawning and sometimes stretching her legs, sometimes leaning her head back, but like really calm. And apparently this turbulence, extreme turbulence, went on for some time. And they reached the destination safely. So the person went and asked her, how is it that you were so calm? And she said, my dad is the pilot and he's taking me home. That's the end of the story. She felt safe. The anxiety that everyone else was experiencing noticeably within the airplane, you don't know if you're going to make it. If you have shelter, you have a place of safety and shelter, it doesn't mean planes don't crash if you feel that. But the little girl felt safe because her dad's taking her home. That's it, my little story. Flying across the Atlantic, and you know how they have those systems, you can say where you are. And so we were over the Atlantic Ocean. It was in the winter. We were over, it was ice below. You don't fall into the ocean and survive. And so what had happened, I was in the left side of the plane. There was a big kaboom and the plane shook. And everyone's, what was that? And after some time, we felt the plane was going down, 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 down. And the pilot, it wasn't like the MC, the pilot got on and said, you probably heard that noise. You may have seen a flash of light out the right window. One of the engines just blew. So we've lost some altitude. But don't worry. We're going to make a glide landing into a part of Canada that used to be a military base during World War II. And it's now for situations like this. And we expect that we'll make it safely. Keep your seatbelt fastened. So I was looking around, people were freaking out. And I was thinking, here we are. I don't know if we're going to make it. But I know one thing, I want to be really fixed in my Krishna consciousness. Like the other day, someone was asking in a home program, Ante Narayana Smriti, you want to remember Krishna at the end of this life. Because whatever you're remembering at the end of life, that's where you go. So am I, here we are. I don't know if we're going to make it. But I know Krishna is my shelter. And so I was quite calm. I was a little surprised myself at how calm I felt. It was really calm. It wasn't like, I got to chant really loudly and scream and, very calm. And then when we landed, it was very interesting. You know, when normally you're coming into an airport, you can see the lights of a city and the lights of the airport, and all it was evergreen trees. And they were just like, you just practically reached down and touched the treetops. And that's how much altitude we had lost. And we came in for a landing, and they put us up in a hotel. It took umpteen hours to get all of our luggage out of the plane and into buses and over to a place. And, you know, people were... It all worked out. But when there's danger, using just this airplane example, if you don't have a place of shelter, when is there not a place, a situation of danger in this world? Like that padam, padam, yadvi padam, at every step. So where's your shelter? Where's your consciousness? And if your consciousness is in transcendence, you can deal with the situation very calmly. And higher consciousness thoughts. And if not, you're lost in this anxiety place, that the anxiety doesn't take care of the problem at all. Not at all. So this is our last slide. Whoops, next to the last slide. This is a meditation invitation. By mantra meditation, focus on alignment of, like we discussed this morning, behaviors, your values, and your deepest held convictions. See an alignment of those things, the spiritual, the subtle, and the physical. And approach the circumstance that you're dealing with in that aligned position, in a prayerful mood, and especially this chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So that's the presentation for this evening. It took a little longer than I thought it would. We have some time for some discussion. Do we have a microphone? I see the microphone on the floor. Could you give her the microphone? And can you adjust the volume so we can hear her? Go ahead.
Thank you so much, Prabhu, for your speech, for your lesson. It was very, very lovely.
Thank you.
I took a lot of notes. But for quite a while, I've been questioning, just for the last minute that you shared, spiritual, subtle, and physical.
Yeah.
Those are three different bodies, right?
Yeah.
So...
Yes.
Do we if you can explain a little bit more about this?
Sure.
Are they going from one towards another, or how is it even?
For me, it works well with that iceberg example that I gave this morning. So let's do that one. There's the tip of the iceberg that's above the surface of the water, and there's the major part of the iceberg is below the surface of the water. So taking the iceberg as a metaphor, there's observable things in measurable things in life, your behaviors, your speech, you know, the external stuff. And those are often resting upon values that you hold. And one influences the other and vice versa. Values over life may change. Behaviors over life may change. One influences the other. We don't zero to behaviors or zero to values. They're both important in a holistic life. But they're all resting upon something more foundational and fundamental. And we'll call that our deepest held, unchanging certainties in life. Whatever that is. So for an individual, a group, or anything, culture. So the idea is to align those things. Yoga means alignment of those things. The focus goes to the foundation. And the benefit of values and behaviors, the other parts of the iceberg, is to connect in alignment with the deepest held unchanging certainties of life. Now they're out of alignment. So it's a process of paying attention, not just to one or the other, but alignment of them. And they're energized from what's at the bottom. Spiritual awakening, spiritual awareness, self-realization includes the others, but it drives the others and it brings the alignment. That's what yoga means and it's what it does. Does that help?
Very much. Thank you so much.
Okay.
I'm thinking, how does unresolved trauma translate into anxiety?
Oh, instantly. there are persons that you and I both know that this is their profession, it's their field. But trauma is something of the past, but nature has its way of storing trauma in your nervous system. And when something out there brings to the mind this, the recollection of the trauma, your whole neurological system kicks in. That's the fight or flight. It may have no connection at all with reality. It has every connection with the trauma that did happen. But the current situation may have nothing to do with the trauma. So how does it work? It's stored within the nervous system and the body, without going into the details of trauma therapy. It's stored in the body. It's in the body because it's there in the mind. We get a body having to do with the mind. The mind has everything to do with our guna and karma. How we perceive things has to do with our guna and karma. The body that we get has that connection, guna and karma, and our past experiences, and it's stored. So unresolved, something over there wiggles, and the trauma wiggles, and it explodes. All those emotions come back again. And there's no control over it. Fight or flight.
I feel at times there are more than one causes of trauma.
It's very complex. Yes, yes, yes. Karma is complex.
Is it possible, like, when there are too many, to find out even the cause of anxiety sometimes becomes difficult because there is so much going on?
Yes, right.
So.
In any given person's experience of life, there may be a prevalent one, especially one that's recurring. Now, this is not my professional field. I just know about it from people that it is their professional field. And they have some sense of how to, bring it to a manageable level. And then, more importantly, to resolve it. There's a science to it. That's not my field. Trauma. Okay. there's a Bhagavad Gita answer. Something that someone that's doing some healing knows, it will be like a band-aid. It's temporary and insufficient unless there's a spiritual core. Or say it the other way. When there's a spiritual core, then trauma healing can be lasting. When there's alignment, then it's lasting and durable. When there isn't a spiritual core, it's like going to a chiropractor and getting alignment, and then 2 weeks later, you got to go back and get another alignment at the chiropractor. Let's give her the microphone. She's on a roll. And then Shravan.
Even if the cause of anxiety is not known, is it possible to get relieved from that anxiety is what I'm thinking.
It's one of the principles of trauma therapy. The answer is yes. And that's one of the principles. So one of the things not to do is run away, tuck it under the rug or it's not there or something like that. But those who teach this, stay with that feeling. You stare the lion in the jaws. Don't run, don't flee. Fight or flight. So then there's sequences that come after that. Where are you feeling? This is because it's stored in the body somewhere. Anyway, I'm not going to go into what's the procedure. But the answer to your question is yes. But it takes somebody that understands the science beyond it, or in addition to the person who is having that experience, the trauma experience, reliving the trauma of the past. And that person and someone that's guiding them through that process and the spiritual core. Then it's possible to know that what today is unknown, tomorrow I may have a better understanding of what that something is. And not just notional or whimsical or speculative, but you can directly confront it. And stare it down and bring it down to size. And then you take some strategic measures to deal with it. Instead of it just remains unknown. Shravan?
I'm trying to articulate this. For a sadhaka, in a course of performing devotional sadhana, actively, passively, or inactive, lot of unwanted stuff from the heart comes out in the process of clearing stage. While performing, the sadhaka tries to align the consciousness of the mind closeness as much as possible to goodness so he can interact to the transcendence while performing sadhana. When this unwanted stuff from the heart comes out, those impressions interact with the mind from the heart, and thus impression has a feeling attached to it, and that could be in a different modes, and at least I noticed it, the consciousness from the mode of goodness follows to the feeling related to a different mode. It could be passion or ignorance. And then starts thinking and feeling and acting either in the mental platform or to exhibit in the external action.
It's a little complicated. Can you keep it simple? Where is this going?
So, like in the morning class, you presented, In order to attain the self-realization, there needs to be favored by Lord Balaram. One has to pray for the strength of Lord Balaram. So my point is, when the consciousness shifts to lower modes of nature due to attachment, to bring back to the normal state, then there needs a lot of strength to do it. Otherwise, it is carried away to accomplish.
You're just repeating what I said this morning in a more elaborate.
I'm trying to understand. Is this how it works?
Yeah. I mean, keeping it simple, you took us through a very interesting, set of things that can happen and sometimes do. So when those things happen, which sometimes do, what do? Just keeping it really simple. There's a means of cleansing. And we take to the means of cleansing. We remain tolerant of these things that you described that are going on. Trying to stay focused on who you really are. Now they're happening, and so it's the tendency is to go to where those things are that are distracting things. But you strive to stay tolerant of the distracting things and focused on who you really are, what's your mission of life, your higher spiritual identity, and calling upon the Krishna, Balaram, for the strength to continue going forward. And then, you have people that are good friends, good counselors, good association people, sadhu sangha people, and you associate with them, that gives you more strength and more guidance and more clarity and more certainty, and you keep going. It's sadhana bhakti with resources that help you understand what's going on, like, the prior question. I want to turn to Prakash and see if you have any chat questions from people that you'd like to read out from your group over there in Singapore.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. I have sent the questions to Yamuna Jivana Prabhu so that he can read locally without audio issues.
Oh, Prakash, are you with us?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
If not, I think we're going to do some of the online questions here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
The audio system is not working. He's speaking, but I have the questions. I can present it.
Okay. Our audio system isn't working, Prakash. So he's going to read out the questions. Are we okay? Go ahead, read out the questions.
So this is from Aditya. How do we train ourselves to seek shelter like we would do when there is extreme turbulence? Meaning feeling helpless perpetually, that inspires us to seek shelter. But won't perpetual feeling of helplessness be harmful for our health in the long run?
There's several questions in that one question.
Yeah.
So unpack it a little bit. I like the example of physical therapy because I found it works. When you have you need to see a physical therapist, something in your body isn't working right. In my case, it was a knee. It wasn't working right. I couldn't bend it. It was. So the physical therapist will give you, do 5 of those and 10 of those and 15 of those 3 times a day. And it's just like really simple. But to do even really simple, it's like. But you do them and then. Okay, really good. And now I have more movement. And so, okay, let's drop those. We'll do some of those and do 15 of those instead of 5 of those. And you just build the strength. You build the muscular system so it then can start to function normally. So spiritually, similarly, how to get to the point where there's something that's really extreme that you can handle it well is start with something that's not so extreme. And by principle, by spiritual guidance and other forms of resources that you holistically can take advantage of, with a spiritual core, you go forward and you then become quite accomplished to handle circumstances that are more extreme, and then more extreme, and then death is pretty extreme. So you can handle it. Now, the other question he asked was, could you go over that again?
Sure. Wouldn't perpetual feeling of helplessness be harmful for our health in the long run?
Yes. There's a tension in spiritual life that's wholesome. There's tension in material life that's unwholesome. But a tension that's wholesome is, it's the humility and aspiration. So it's two ends of a rope or a stick or something. And the aspiration is something that's very high, and down here is I'm unworthy. I'm insignificant. It's humility. And that's wholesome. Because if you're not humble, then you'll have a misconception of who you are and your capabilities, and you won't be eager so much for something that's really worthy. So it's not... If all there is, in response to what Aditya said, if all there is that, you know, the downside, the self beratement, beat yourself up and I'm, you know, an unworthy person, that's, you got a problem. You have a mode of ignorance problem. But there's spiritual humility where the lack of substance over on this side, the spiritual humility, yet hankering and yearning for something that's really worthy and it's far from me. That's good. That's energizing. And you stay with it. And you stay with it and you call for strength to reach that position, although I'm not worthy. It's important to for me to reach that higher consciousness place. So I want to go there. I'm eager for it. And so it's that you put that on the other end and it's a good dynamic. I hope that worked for you, Aditya.
This is from Giridhar. How do we handle spiritual anxiety?
Welcome
it. That is the anxiety of not being pure and the anxiety of not remembering the Lord at the last moment of death.
That's a good anxiety. Embrace it. And embracing it means, let me continue to move towards that. My effort, the combination of effort and mercy is insufficient. Let me increase my effort. Let me increase my appeal for mercy. It's wholesome. Embrace it. Good.
This is from Karen K. She asks, how do I move into a state of peace when the root of my anxiety is the fear of having a panic attack?
Well, you may need to address the fear of a panic attack. And it depends upon how severe that is. You may need some people that really know how to help you deal with fear of a panic attack. Depends on how strong it is, or how acute it is. But perhaps, you know, depending upon how acute it is, you can just put it in a parking lot. Say, I'll deal with you later. Right now, I'm going to focus on going to where I want to go. I want to focus on the place of higher consciousness and moving along that direction. And it may be that fear of a panic attack is overblown or overinflated, and it's not really as big as you thought it was yesterday, and you've moved on. No, it depends on how severe it is.
This is from Vanita. I'm going to read it and see if the healthy anxiety do make us identify with our body, and so there may be some cases where these might go out of control and yes. disturb our practice of chanting.
Yes.
Which then makes us cause or makes us offend the holy name. How to handle this?
Continue, start on the right foot and continue doing course correction as you're moving along. That is to say, in the beginning stages, the mind is like extra distracted, is not so focused. So you make some, you know, you have modest expectations and you proceed first, you know, right foot first, and then continue to consider the left foot next, and you know, you make little steps in the direction that you want to go, and then you get distracted and you go back to course correction. Do regular course correction in the course of beginning, particularly in the beginning of your spiritual practices, and make effort, read Bhagavad Gita regularly so you have a more of a support of a spiritual conception of life and the world around you and yourself. And you continue like that, cultivating.
This is from Anish. He asks, as a young and aspiring Krishna conscious follower, I develop a certain mood or bhava during sadhana, my practice. What is the mood of an advanced devotee like yourself in front of deities and during sadhana practice?
It's a mood of dependence on whatever Krishna, on mercy, whatever Krishna wishes. And it's a mood of eagerness for that mercy, whatever it is. And it can be whatever it is. And it's quite okay because it's Krishna's mercy. So that's a simple way of sharing. Go ahead.
I don't fully understand this question, but it says, sometimes working in the service mood has a fear of missing the bus.
Missing the buck?
Missing the bus. The bus that drives by.
Oh, the deer? Buck? That this fear of running into a deer?
No, a big car, the bus.
The bus, B-U-S, okay.
Missing the bus.
Okay.
So I'm not sure I'd understand this question, but it says sometimes working in the service mood has the fear of missing the bus. How to overcome this?
Missing the bus, I think that means like, you know, the real purpose of life, I'm just missing out on the real purpose of that's missing the bus and doing the service. So if you stay in the, at least from what I can understand from the question, service is not just a behavior. It's a mood and a means to self-realization. If I forget the purpose of the service and just get so absorbed in the service, in the mood of doing service, and I abandoned myself and life's mission, who I really am, and connecting with that. That's a possibility. I know people that do that. So what to do? So go back to square one. Before you begin your service, you ask yourself, what's the purpose of this service and service mood? Why is it important to me? And you'll make that heart connection and then serve to your heart's content. And then keep checking in with yourself. Why am I doing this? What's the purpose? Like that.
This devotee would like to ask the question anonymously. I understand, based on discussions with a doctor, there are two kinds of anxieties. The first is due to unresolved trauma or due to the anxious nature of a person. And the second is due to a chemical imbalance in the brain. In the latter case, a person may not have any reason to be anxious, but medically the imbalance in the brain causes it. Do you have any thoughts on whether the second type of anxiety can be controlled or reduced using the spiritual techniques you mentioned in the class?
In the highest sense of things, yes. And depending again on the acuteness of the situation, some medication may be needed just to get back on the bus, back into a process of alignment. Nature has its way of bringing things into alignment. Body has its way of healing itself. But it depends on the acuteness of the situation. There's my answer. Okay. I think we're...
A couple more.
Mm-hmm. I want to wrap it up because brain fatigue. Okay.
Anxiety in one person, this is from Madhukana. Anxiety in one person in the family makes others in the family also anxious.
Yeah.
How to deal with that?
Accept that they're a member of the family and they're in anxiety, and you give whatever support you can. And you rely on Krishna, and hopefully they can learn to rely upon Krishna too. You keep good association to help the family stay on course.
And I think this is from Sanchari. She asks, how do I encourage others to help me in my service to Krishna?
Keep the door open. I mean, you know, keep your heart open. And, you know, be a little bit discriminating or selective about, you know, what you discuss when somebody comes in the door. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada ki jai. I have a box here with some Mahaprasadam, and I think I have enough to go around. I'm pretty sure I do. So I'm going to walk around and give out some Mahaprasadam.
Thank you so much for joining us, everyone. If you have further questions or comments, we'll leave our email in the chat. Please feel free to reach out to us, or you can also reach out to us through our Facebook page, which you have access to. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Hare Krishna.